Welcome to the Choose to Be podcast. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining today. We are sharing a pre-recorded Road to Recovery webinar that Luke and Alana have recently done on how to survive the holidays as you are navigating healing at the same time. This is a great episode for both partners. And as always, thank you for joining. Here you go.
Okay, so we were talking about the topic, which is surviving the holidays. Y'all, this is such a tough time of year. So if you find yourself feeling, well, whatever feeling you're having, we want to just give you some tools this evening. We want to give you some tools, but mostly just validate what you're experiencing for both of you. So we're going to jump right into it. Okay. So the first thing we're going to talk about is understanding where you're at today. So as you guys are going through this journey, recognizing that there's expectations for the holiday season and there's actual reality, that can be really hard. Because first of all, this is an expectation-filled year. And two, if you have your experience of coming into this journey, and this is your first year that you've been through it, this is one of the hardest parts. Every single time to that first year, you go through something, whether it's the first anniversary, whether it's the first holiday season, whether it's the first birthday, whatever it might be, first time school starts, all those firsts are really hard. So add just the holiday season to it. It is ridiculously hard to get through it. Go ahead, Alan.
In our outline, we just put some notes down in tonight, especially where we're going to go through and hit some specific things that you can do. We really wrote down some notes. And the very first thing that Luke had put down under Alana is he put effing first. And he wrote F-ing first, effing first. And it made me laugh because that's really what it is. That first year of those firsts, when you haven't gone through it yet, you don't know what to expect, can be so difficult and so painful. And I love, Luke, that you started with expectations. Brené Brown talks a lot about checking your expectations. And she talks about how a lot of times we can't get rid of expectations. That would be great if we could just be like, hey, clean slate, get rid of them all. I have no expectations. I'm good. But the reality is we have expectations whether we want to or not. And if you've had a lifetime of your holidays looking a certain way, you are going to be chuck filled with expectations of yourself, of your spouse, of your holiday, of your extended family, of all of that. So you really have to take a minute to get clear with what your expectations are, and then also get clear with where you are. And I think, Luke, if you're open to this, I think it would be really helpful if maybe Luke and I take you back in time a little bit to what our first holiday season looked like. Because it was brutal.
Yeah, it was extremely brutal. Because I think for Alana and I, this has been through the years, a really wonderful time of the year, really connecting experiences, even though she wasn't reckoned, even though we know now that I was living in secrecy and hiding. There was also it was a fallen time of year thing for both of us. The first one that comes to mind is, there's a couple that come to mind. The first one of the times I recognized the extent of the damage that I caused, because Alana and I would really celebrate that time of year. And one of the favorite things that we had to do was decorate our Christmas tree and just decorate in general. And we get into it together. We pull all the bins out with all the holiday decorations. And I just recognized that, like, this was not going to be the same experience. And at first I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense for what we're going through. But I remember specifically when we got to the tree, her just sitting on the couch, and she seemed almost just not there. She just wasn't in that experience. And I remember at first feeling like, it's like our, and this is so insensitive, I know, can't we do this part? Can we do this? This can be maybe a little bit of a break from our pain. And the expectation I had of her stepping into that, having a good holiday and thinking that could be a release. And it was a lot to watch you go through what you were going through, Alana.
It was interesting because we were at that point like 6 months into doing a lot of really good recovery work. And so in my head, it was, I shouldn't feel this way. I should enjoy the holidays. I should enjoy decorating the trees. So look at my kids. They're having fun putting ornaments up. And I couldn't function. Like, I remember sitting there and just being in, and it's the fight, flight, or freeze. I just had so much trauma that I was in this freeze state and desperately wanting in my head of just get up and do it, just participate, just have fun, and putting all of this pressure on myself and just not being able to do it because it wasn't where I was at. And I think at one point, I'm trying to remember if this was year one or if it was year two, but I think it was year one that at some point you were like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to do it. And giving me that permission, because at the time I still wasn't giving myself that permission. And I remember that being really helpful. Year two was definitely not as bad as that first year because I knew a little bit about what to expect. But that first year, I had this mentality of, I'm just going to power through. And there were times that I just was not capable of powering through. And the more I tried to force myself to do it, the more I actually caused more harm to myself.
Yeah, that had to have been a second year thing where I finally said that. Maybe it just took 2 years to let it get through my head that this was not going to be the same. And we talk a lot about when D-Day happens, when disclosure happens, when the partner finds out, the world burns down. And that was the old life, that experience. And I had to let that go, that it was going to be that way. Now we build our new. We're 10 years into this thing. So we built new. So we don't want to paint a picture that we don't have an enjoyable Christmas time. But that was hard for a while.
And our first step, if you're taking notes, like step number one is understand where you are today and let that be okay. And I think I'm speaking more to the betrayed partners. And so, Luke, I would love you to speak to those who have betrayed. But for the partners who are working through their own hurt and betrayal, really understand where you are today and be kind and gentle with yourself and let it be okay that you're not okay. That is so important because the more you're able to give yourself that grace and self-compassion, the more you're able to slow that down, the faster you actually move forward in your healing.
Thank you. And letting for person that is betraying, letting her be where she's at and not letting them be where they're at. Really important to not put that in the slightest bit of pushing, even though we don't know it's pushing, comes across really heavy to them.
Can you talk more about that? That's so huge because already there's so much internal pressure and expectations. I want to make the holidays good for my kids. I want to make it good for my spouse. I want to be able to continue these traditions. And so even the littlest comments and the littlest like nudging can feel like this tremendous weight and pressure.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind is I come from an enmeshed family. We talked about that in group tonight. Enmeshment. And I really wanted Alana to put on a face like we were supposed to do as a family and come to family events, Christmas parties, get-togethers. And letting that go, that if we're going to go, I was going to go alone and take the kids. This wasn't going to be something where she needed to show up. And I can, without using words, I can add pressure to that. Or just with little side comments, I guess those are words to make her, to share with her how much I want her to be there. And I can justify that her wanting to be here is good. It's helpful, but it's really whatever she needs. And that was to not go, just not feel that pressure.
Yeah. Thank you for saying like that pressure of words or without words, because there's explicit, the words we say, or there's the implicit. And implicit could be the cold shoulder, the punishing, the pouting, the having those intense reactions when your partner isn't showing up the way that you want them to because of their betrayal and because of their trauma. And you get to have feelings around that, but work through those with your therapist, with your coach, with your group, so you're not putting that pressure on your spouse. You're letting them be where they need to be to heal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I'm realizing if we go at the speed limit.
I want to get through them all.
Rest of our list.
Okay. So you want me to hit the next one?
Yep.
Okay. So the next one is for the person that is betraying, the keep your regular routine. All right. So sobriety has to come first. And I recognize this is going to have impact on the betrayed. It's going to impact on the partner. So during that journey, so often, it's not uncommon for the holidays to hit and the guy to fall out, the person that is betraying to fall out of their routine and fall out of their pattern. And it has to stay as a priority during the holiday season. I remember missing things that I did not want to miss because I was going to group or I had to go to therapy or whatever it might be, that I had to stick to my routine. And the reason I say that impact on the partner is I watched Alana have to carry a lot of the load that wasn't okay, but also for that first part of my journey, for me to be able to stay in sobriety so I could get into recovery, it was really important I didn't lose my routine during the holidays because there's so much distraction, it's so easy to justify. And I do want to talk about that it doesn't mean that I have to have the exact same routine. I can have a revised holiday safety plan. Okay. It can look different during the holidays, but it's a proactive approach, not a reactive approach. And it's one where I'm sharing with my spouse of, hey, I'm going to keep safety for me, and which is going to turn keep safety for you. I'll be transparent about my safety plan with you because I'm going to tweak a little bit during the holidays. But I did talk to my therapist. I did talk to my coach. I talked to my accountability partner. This is what I have. What do you think about it? Do you have any thoughts or feelings on this? And she gets a chance to respond. So revisions are perfectly acceptable, but that regular routine has to stay at the top of the list.
The amount of people who come to us mid to end of January who are in a really tough spot because of the distractions and letting their recovery and their work and focusing on healing their relationship, letting all of those things slip. And then real life comes again. And then, yeah, they're coming to us that we need help. It's our busiest time of year, mid-January until like end of February, busiest time of year. I love that you said proactive versus reactive. That planning ahead with the proactiveness, planning ahead and letting your partner know what your plan is, creates so much safety.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we touched this, but it's going to be really fast. So be present in the moment. So for the person of the betraying, be there, be present with her during this really hard time of year, because it's really hard, but also in the experiences. Alana, you got a smile on your face.
You cannot stop saying her. So we talked about before the recording.
Oh, we so did.
That there, we have so many partners where the acting out or the problematic sexual behaviors happen for men and women alike. And so we were talking about using language more. And so I'm smiling because I know you're trying. And
I'm trying.
You didn't. Okay. The staying present in the moment, this is so little and so huge. And I'm going to speak as a betrayed partner for a minute. When Luke is present with me, when he is emotionally available, when he can hear me, when he's looking at me, when he sees me, when he's not numbing out on his phone, when he's emotionally available, that means the world to me. We as humans have a need to be seen and heard, but especially from the person who's our primary attachment, and especially when we're healing from betrayal. And so going back to, there's so many distractions this time of year, you have to work hard to make it a priority to be present. And I'm going to say this for both. Being present as a betrayed partner, being present with whatever's coming up for you, not numbing the feelings, allowing yourself to feel and to work through them, and allowing yourself to be in your body and aware. And depending on where you're at in your journey, that's going to be easier or harder. And so going back to that first step of like, wherever you are, it's okay. But practicing being present is so important.
Yeah. Okay. So this also leads into building ways to find peace. So being present, I can't be present with the person that I hurt unless I am in a good space, unless I am regulated. So speaking just for the person that the betrayed, that alone time, that spirituality, the meditation, that can those types of things, allowing myself to get grounded so I can be with somebody else.
In figuring out what that is for you, and this is for both partners, each of us have individual ways of how we find peace in our life. And if you hear this and you're like, I have no idea how to find peace. If you're a betrayed partner and you're like, I'm in so much pain right now, peace feels like a million miles away. Yeah. And we can practice getting regulated and we can practice doing those things that can help start calming our nervous system, which will move us on that pathway towards peace. And for the person who's acted out and betrayed, really tapping in, whether it be to spirituality or it be to meditation or it be to that slowing down and resting in mindfulness, being present, that can help you tap into that inner peace.
Yeah. And I think getting to that inner peace kind of leads us to our next one, which is the self-care and the community care. So let me just repeat that again, self-care and community care. A lot of times in order to find that peace, it starts with being able to be with people that understand the journey that we're in, understand the pain that are in that specific hole with us and being around those people. And that is part of that self-care. And then being aware of other things that you do to just take care of you. And just for the holiday season, there's so many emotions, but we're so not aware of the emotions we're experiencing. So just being able to slow down so we can feel those emotions.
It's so common, especially during the holidays, that the more that gets added to our plate, it's that self-care that falls off. It's us that we lose. And I'll have clients that I sit with and they go, yeah, but I have to. Checklist. I can't not da 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 da. And so we get all of these pressures and then it's, I don't have time for me because I have to do all of these things. And the reality is, and there's going to be part of you that's going to hate this, but the reality is you don't have to do all of those things. You don't. And if we're doing it at the expense of losing you, then that's problematic. So it's really important that we don't lose that self-care. That gets prioritized first. And self-care and community care are different. Self-care is how we take care of ourselves and our needs. And I love the pies, physical, intellectual, emotional, spiritual, getting pies every day. But that community care is when we are, and this is for my betrayed partners, when we're healing from betrayal, betrayal happens relationally and it heals relationally. So getting that community care, not just with your significant other, but getting that from those emotionally safe people around you who can help support you and carry you.
Yeah, absolutely. Alana, do you want to touch on that next one?
Yes. The next one is practice gratitude. And I put in a million notes on this. And as I was putting in notes on this, I'm sure that's why, Luke, you gave it to me because you're like, oh, crap, there's a lot of notes. But there's so much research on what gratitude does in rewiring your brain. Because of neuroplasticity, our brain can change when we are regularly grateful. And I'm going to speak to both sides. For my betrayed partners, it helps regulate your nervous system. It helps decrease your cortisol levels. It helps you be able to start working through those feelings and moving out of seeing everything through a negative light and start bringing in that positivity. So as you start practicing this every day, it is really helpful in healing your betrayal trauma. They did a study where they brought in people and they had participants who every single day wrote a letter of gratitude to themselves. And then the other group of participants is every day wrote all of their complaints and things that went wrong. And I don't remember over the time frame, But when they went back and looked at these two groups, those who had practiced the gratitude every day had recovered emotionally faster. And so it does make a difference. And then for the person who has hurt their partner, it helps practicing that gratitude every day helps move you into a more empathetic state. Research has shown that it helps your brain be primed more for empathy. It affects the amygdala. I'll have to glance at my notes. I can't remember. It was the amygdala and the, I had another part of the brain. I'll look in a minute. But it helps those part of your brains become more primed for that empathy. It helps create serotonin, and it also gives more dopamine, which if we have repetitive or addictive problematic sexual behavior, being able to rewire your brain for that healthy dopamine and that healthy serotonin is really important. Gratitude can be really helpful and beneficial in that. Practicing a daily habit of gratitude for both sides can be really huge, especially right now when so much stress is so high. Anything to bring down those cortisol levels is going to be really beneficial.
That was awesome. And Alana, the reason I didn't want to do that was not because of all of your notes. I did not want to tell the people a little bit of trade on this call that you need to have gratitude right now.
Okay, I get that.
I was going to let you come from a space if I've been there before to have that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about saying no. But Alana, do you mind touching on this one too?
Yeah, this one really is for our betrayed partners. So often, and I am going to genderize here. I'm going to say so often my female clients really have a hard time saying no. And so learning how to say no and letting no be a complete answer. I'm listening to the book, Atomic Habits. Yeah, I'm listening to that one right now. And they were talking about limiting beliefs. And I wrote out one of my limiting beliefs. And it was something along the lines of, is to say no to something. I have this belief that I need to unravel that I have to have a good enough excuse or a good enough reason. Like I have to justify why I can't do it. And if I can do it, then I should do it. And how burnt out and problematic that becomes for me. And this idea of, and I've been working on this for a decade. This is nothing new. Still working on it. Still working on this core belief because there's a lot of layers to it. But learning that you don't have to give a reason why there's a no, because there's lots of invitations this time of year. There's lots of, can you do this? Will you do this? Hey, you're coming to this, right? And right now, especially where there's a good chance, especially if you're here tonight, you're prioritizing your recovery healing. You don't have to tell people reasons why you're prioritizing it, but just letting that be a no. The author, Adam Moore, he uses a phrase, that's not going to work for me. I'm sorry. And that's what he says. But even no by itself is a complete answer. And I think pre-planning, saying no to certain things can also help empower you when those situations come up.
That's awesome. All right. So the other one leans into, and we have two more, by the way, if you're like, how many are
actually, we have three more because there's a huge one we didn't hit that I thought of, which is how to navigate in-laws and extended family.
Well, that's like a whole one within itself.
I know, but we will tap on that because if I don't, then I will feel really bad later.
Okay. Let me hit these two and then we'll move to that one. Okay, so the other one is ask, and I'm going to speak to the betrayed right now, y'all. Ask for help and delegate. So much pressure has fallen on you for so many years, and it's okay, especially to ask for that help and push things off and be able to ask the person who hurt you that you need some more support and help. And then for them, the person that they're betraying, to step up, show up at this time of year. But I know it's heavy and I know it's hard, but to be there as they ask for help and push things off. See, I didn't say she or him. Do you see how hard that was for me, Alana? I had to stop a few different times. Okay, last one, and then Alana, you can talk about in-laws. When you are ready, create those new memories. So do not rush this, but when you are ready, it's a new life. You're building something different. It's going to look different. So you can lean into creating those new memories, lean into something that you may not have putting all that hard work into.
This one, I would say, like, across the board for your healing journey, as part of that relational repair is creating those new memories, doing different things, allowing it to be different, not just the holidays, but it's especially acute during the holidays of that opportunity to do something different. So maybe where every year in the past we've had Thanksgiving dinner at home and the betrayed partner did the majority of the cooking, maybe this year we go out to dinner and it's totally different and we're creating a new memory, and we might do it and go, that was awesome. Or we might do it and go, yeah, let's try something else next year. And then giving yourself that room and taking those opportunities to create those new memories can be really helpful in connecting in your healing journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you have on the in-laws?
First, in-laws are really hard. And especially sitting with clients, being in our groups, and then Luke and I having our own experiences, when you have your own relationship that you're trying to heal, and then you bring in these other family dynamics that impact this relationship, it can be really challenging. And so with in-laws, my number one recommendation is, if you can, get on the same page as your spouse and come up with a plan together ahead of time of how you want to navigate it. And it may mean that there's a period where you're both not going. There may be a period where only one of you is going. There may be where you both are going, but we're staying somewhere further away so we can have time to recalibrate ourselves. Or it could be we're right there in the thick of things, but we're going to take every 2 hours, we're going to go be alone and check in with each other and be present and stay connected. And it's figuring out what the two of you really need to be able to be most successful with staying emotionally regulated. That's what I would say our goal is. With in-laws, it's what do we need to do for each of us as individuals, and then also as a couple, to be able to stay the most emotionally regulated. And for me, for the first 2 years, I wasn't able to be emotionally regulated in the way that I wanted to. I wasn't able to be present without either embarrassing myself or being in more pain. So for me, I didn't do stuff with my in-laws for about 2 years. And I like baby stepped my way back into it. Not everybody needs to do it like that, but that's what I needed for my own healing, which goes back to that very first step one is let it be okay that you're not okay.
Okay. I'm going to go after something real quick and I might need your help on the back end with this one. Okay. So a lot of this, or personally, the betraying started way back in family of origin, way back with my mom and dad and my siblings, that I start to show up and attach to them in really unhealthy ways. And then I left that space and got into a new relationship, but took all my unhealthiness with me and brought it into that new relationship, which is the marriage that I'm in now. That, in the process of me getting healthy, is also learning to separate from those unhealthy relationships that I should have done a long time ago. So if you find yourself feeling like you're picking between your spouse and your family of origin, it's because you are. And that's what you were responsible for a long time ago, was to be able to create that differentiation and that separation. So just encourage you that everything your body says is, I got to stay close to a family of origin. It's okay that you're not with them for a season, that it feels like you're abandoning them or whatever it is, because you're untying things and you're pulling things out. So you're there to support the person you betray, not the other people.
There is a video on YouTube, and I'm going to put it in the chat for those who are live, and I'll put it in the recording or the email for those who get this later. But let's see, everyone. This is a video to an episode done by Ken Adams, and he joined called Conversations on Sex Addiction and Betrayal Trauma, I think is what they called. Oh, it's called Conversations on Sex Addiction and Relationships. And Ken Adams came and he talked about this family relationships when they have enmeshment and how to practice stepping out of it, because that's a whole complex journey and a whole nother conversation for another day. But that episode, I want to say it's like an hour, is a really good foundation to get you started if you're resonating with any of that enmeshment piece.
Yeah, love that. Okay, ready to transition along?
Yeah. Yep, we have about 20 minutes for questions.
Okay, so for usually, I'm going to turn this back over here, Vanessa, after this. Usually y'all are like super nice to each other and let other people ask questions first, and then they'll, all the questions come in at the last 5 minutes. So please don't delay. But Vanessa, what do we have?
Okay, so this first question actually came in just as we first started talking. So you may have done a lot of answering in this question, but anything that you would reiterate or have any other thoughts? Question is, how do we stay sane while trying to navigate the healing journey during the holidays, especially when your partner is easily triggered? And because of that, more irritable.
Which partner are we talking about, y'all? Can you?
Can we talk for both, Luke?
Sure. Yeah. Can you repeat one more time, Vanessa?
Yeah. How do you stay sane during the holidays when your partner is easily triggered?
You want to go first? Let me go first.
I can go first. I'm going to think and talk out loud here. But the more irritable, I'll speak for Luke and I, that when Luke, even still today, I think it's human nature that when we get more stressed or there's more demands on us, it is easier to be more irritable. And so when Luke got more irritable and he got emotionally triggered, that was really scary for me. Because I was so scared that him not being emotionally okay meant that he would go back to acting out behaviors, that he would go back to hurting me. And so everything felt scary. And so anytime he wasn't emotionally okay, then I was constantly like watching him. And if he wasn't okay, then I wasn't okay. And I really had to practice, especially during these times, I had to practice not putting all of my energy and focusing on what he was or wasn't doing, which I know is way easier said than done. But I had to come back to things that I could control. And I used to have the sign on my wall that said, control the controllables. And the controllables are, I can control my reactions, my responses, how I think, how I feel, what I choose to do, my behaviors. And I would write down like specific behaviors that I could do, like, I can work through my triggers. I can do self-care. I can do grounding. And so when I saw him spinning for whatever reason, then what I wanted to do is I wanted to jump in and fix him. But jumping in and fixing him didn't actually help the problem. It actually created a greater wedge between us. And so what I did is I really worked on being able to do my own individual healing work and always kept that door open, that invitation open of when you're ready or when you're emotionally available, I'm here. But also I can't like keep buying tickets to your crazy train and jumping on it when you're having a really difficult time and spinning all over the place. We don't need to both be spinning. Now, I say that now really calmly with a clear head. That is not what it looked like our first or second year practicing this. It was usually it sounded more in my head of like, F you, like, how dare you be that way? That's my bodyguard showing up. And I'm going to go over here and take care of myself. But then as soon as I started getting more emotionally regulated, then I could go, okay, I see this is where he's at and this is how I need to take care of myself.
Did you say tickets to my crazy train? That's awesome. And those tickets are really expensive, by the way. And I had to pay a lot for those. Okay, so y'all, this is for the person that they're betraying. I want to highlight something once, and I hope you can hear this if you can't see it in your partner. Okay. But again, I'm talking about the person that they're betraying. She said she was scared, right? She said in those moments when I was triggered and I'm spinning, she was scared. That is not what I saw. I believe her. Like, that is true. That is accurate. But in those moments, what I only saw was I saw anger. I saw, I don't know, frustration. That was the things I said. But remember, that was just a reflection on my own shame. And then, Alana, you mentioned not getting in and fixing it and it getting worse. It's because that fixing it is you're stepping in and you're touching my shame. And then I'm just going to let it blow up on you. I guess what I just hope that you can hear inside of that is looking Alana through this. She said she was scared. Lil couldn't believe that was scared, but it is scared. So when my wife, when my partner is triggered, I don't have to make it about me. I can just be present for them.
Which is really a skill that you can build, that skill of practicing, learning how to be present with your partner, even when your own shame is coming up. And so if you're like, I don't know how to even do that, something that I highly suggest doing individual work around and doing group work around.
Yeah. And that part of it is if it's a holiday season and I'm the person who betrayed them and I can't be present for that trigger, it means I have more work to do because I'm supposed to come to that regulated, self-regulated, grounded. So when person I betrayed is having a trigger, I can stay present. I can be there. So that's what I would recommend for the person to betray, is be there, be present, hold that space for them while they're having that experience. And then that's the healing. That's where the trust starts to get rebuilt.
That right there, and I'll say this, I've said this many times, so if you've hung with me for a while, you've probably already heard this, but you need to become, this is for the person who's betrayed, you need to become best friends with her bodyguard. And her bodyguard can look really mean or cold or aggressive, but that bodyguard is just trying to keep a really hurt, tender little person inside of them safe. And so learning to not see that as danger or as threatening, but learning how to see what's really underneath, that's where you can really start being helpful. It makes me think of that picture of the couple. And maybe we'll put this in the email too. It's one of my favorite pictures. I would love a statue of this, but it's of a statue and you have the silhouette of the two bodies who are sitting back to back with each other. And then inside of each of them, you see these little kids who are reaching out to each other. And so we get this where we're turning away from each other, but we have these inner childs who are reaching out saying, please see me. Please don't abandon me. Please stay with me. Are you looking for it right now?
Yeah, is that okay?
Oh, I just can see your eyes going. So
it's so good. It's just, it's so golden. Because if you can really just take in the picture, if you can just really just process it for a second, think about each other, that's what it feels like, right? That's what it feels like is I don't know how to connect them. And all I want is love. And then you have that little person that Alana talked about inside of here, the great Burning Man sculpture and stuff. Okay. So they have those little people inside there that just want to just touch each other. So want to be with each other. And if I can remember Alana is like that little person, I'm telling you, if I can picture her as that, she can say anything to me. She can tell me about all the pain that I've caused her. She can tell me about how much it hurt. But it's just gonna, I can hold space for that.
Hey, Vanessa, should we go to the next?
Okay, so this one, you guys shared some great tips about how to handle holiday events together. What if you're not invited to the holiday event? And if you guys could speak to that from both sides of how do you handle going to a holiday event alone? And then how do you handle if you're the one who's not invited to go?
Lonnie, will you touch on it, please?
I'll start with the if you're going alone, having something that you want to say ahead of time that to you feels authentic and real and gives the amount of disclosure you're comfortable with, having that planned ahead of time. So for a long time, I was very trained of giving excuses for Luke. because there was a lot of times Luke just didn't want to do stuff with my family or even his family. And I would go to things and people would go, oh, where's Luke? And be like, oh, he has to work, or oh, he has to whatever. And the truth was, is I was protecting him. And as part of my recovery, I was like, I'm done protecting him. I want to be authentic in all of my relationships. And I want to be radically honest. But that doesn't mean that everyone also gets to be in my private business. And so I had to come up with something that I could say for me that felt within my value systems and that felt authentic, but also wasn't protecting him from his own choices or his natural consequences. And so when I would go to events alone, people would say, oh, where's Luke? And I'd say, oh, he's at home tonight. And they say, oh, why is he not here? And I'd say, that's a good question for him. And I would just let him answer that question. And I would, and it looked different, like maybe what I prepared, what I wanted to say around his family or around my family or around friends. But I went into that situation prepared. Also, that doesn't change the feelings that come with that. There was still disappointment every time that he wasn't there. Whether I wanted him there or not, because there was times where we were in a really tough spot and I didn't want him there, but there was still pain and disappointment because really deep down, I did want him there. And so the pain of him not being there, I still had to do my work around that piece of it. That was still hard.
Yeah. The thing that comes to mind for me, Alana, was the being responsible for other people's emotions. I have this person at this party, family member, friends, and all of my unhealthiness tells me like, I need to give them answers. And I don't owe them that space because I'm not in control of their emotions or their thoughts. They're in most likely their perceived thoughts. It's not actually what they're thinking. So the short answers are really uncomfortable for me, but also really healthy option that way. And that goes for either person.
And then for the person who is not being invited, and usually that's if you are the spouse that's hurt your partner, and then you're told that you can't come to Christmas or you can't come to this family dinner or you're not invited to this, you're going to have feelings around that. And shoving that down, numbing those out will only lead to further problems later. But you don't put that on your partner that you've hurt. You find your safe people to work through that with, which are people who are still friends to the relationship, but understand what the healing journey looks like. So it's not going to a bunch of your buddies who are going to bash your partner. That's not going to be helpful. It's not going to your mom who's going to say, yeah, they should have done, and then they're bashing your partner. Those things aren't helpful. But it's talking to people who can let you feel what you need to feel, can speak truth to you, can help you work through it. So it could be a therapist, it could be a coach, it could be a sponsor, it could be people who are further in their journeys. But you have to do that work around what's coming up for you. You don't have to. But if you don't, it will be problematic later because those things that get buried alive never die.
What's next, Vanessa?
Just a question. Do you see more couples separate during the holidays?
No. I see more who separate before the holidays, or they hang on and separate right after the holidays because they're trying to put on that face or their front for the holidays. But come January, I would say that I have seen more couples who struggle in January who may or may not separate, or separate could also mean an in-home separation, but that's usually when I see it.
And also we have a big belief system that choose, which is separations aren't the end. They can be a healing separation. So if you're like, oh my gosh, January, we have a separation. Remember, there's an appropriate, healthy part of that journey. And a lot of times couples will stay together for kids too, so they can maintain that normalcy.
Amy and I on our podcast, the Choose to Be podcast, We did a 4-part series on separation, on like when to do it, why to do it, how to make it beneficial, how to have it therapeutic. And I don't remember when we recorded them, but it was this year. So if you search through the podcast, and maybe summertime that we released those. But if you're in that situation of trying to navigate a separation, or you feel like you need a separation, or you're trying to come back from a separation, those episodes can be helpful.
See if I can find the episode. This next question is just in general, not necessarily during the holidays. If every day he has a new way to attack me, and I'm going to replace the gender pronoun with just they. If every day they have a new way to attack me, how do I navigate the rough, hard feelings from this and the desire for closeness at the same time?
I'm thinking.
I'll give my emotional reaction to this question in it. I have so much empathy because there's so much pain in this question. If every day they have a new way to attack me, so they've already hurt me, I'm already betrayed, and every day they're still causing me more pain, but I want to navigate from this. I want to move through this because I still desire that closeness. That is such a painful place to be, because what we're talking about is we're not talking about just, I was betrayed in the past and now here they are and they're really trying and I have all these triggers from the past that are coming up, which is so hard and so painful, but it's, I've got all the triggers from the past, but every day I'm constantly being attacked and having new damage caused. Then that is so hard. And that doesn't remove the attachment. That attachment part of us that's hooked to that survival part of the brain that says, I need to be close to you. I want to be close to you. That attachment part doesn't go away, at least not without a lot of work around that. And so there's this battle between, and this Michelle Mays coined the phrase attachment ambivalence of, I need to protect myself. That's a natural instinctive desire, and attachment. I need to attach to my primary attachment, natural instinctive. So these two natural instinctive drives are both competing against each other at the same time. And that can feel like chaos within ourselves. But it comes down to a matter of, if we are constantly being attacked, and I'm going to use the word attacked, I'm going to go really extreme with this. And if you have physical violence in your life, this might be a little triggering. So I'm going to put that disclaimer out there. But emotional attacks cause as much damage as physical attacks. So if every day you are being hit, every single day you're being hit, but you're also having this desire for closeness, we would say, we have to create enough safety for yourself that you're not getting hit every single day. And that's your job as an individual, is you have to create that distance and that safety however you need to get safe enough that you're not in this, the line of fire of being constantly hit. And same thing with emotional. If you're emotionally being attacked every single day, then you are going to need to work on those steps to take to create that safety, so you're out of the line of fire. And so that a lot of times needs that individual work to help us navigate. How do we do boundaries? How do we work with those limiting beliefs that block us from having those boundaries? How do we empower ourselves that we can start moving forward to be able to stand on our own 2 feet? Because when we're able to do that, we're better able to engage relationally, and we actually give the relationship a more fighting chance to work than by staying in the line of fire, just hoping to connect. And all of that is really hard. Like I say that and I'm like, I know that one is a painful truth to hear.
I keep thinking about the person that they would not be able to see that they were actually attacking their spouse. I'm not attacking them. They wouldn't be able to see it. So I'm thinking about this, trying to relevant example of what attack looks like. So it would make a lot of sense. So I'm thinking about, and I won't disclose, I'll keep this person safe. When working with a person, one of the things that that the person who's been betrayed does is they make comments on their pain. And they say, this is what I'm feeling today. And this is what I'm feeling about the past. And they'll ask questions. And that person that did the betraying, it really has a hard time managing their own emotions in that conversation. So they start to do some defending. And through that emotional escalation, that they'll start to get to a place where they're commenting on the person they hurt's behavior. You're not exactly a perfect person, or you have your, actually that was too strong. There's stuff going on in our marriage that has to do with you too. You're not at fault here. So that's the attacks that are going on. And often there has to be some separation before that could be seen as an attack, even that defending and I don't know, putting it back on the other person. That could be that part.
I really like Omar Minwala's work on the secret sexual basement. And he talks about problematic sexual behaviors when they're repetitive being an integrity disorder. And as part of that integrity disorder, he talks about the damage and pain that it causes. And he talks about it through the lens of emotional abuse. And he talks about the gaslighting and the manipulation and the defending. But in the defending, they're flipping it back on their spouse. And so there's almost this transference or this, I can't think of the word I'm looking for, deflecting and putting it on their spouse. And all of those behaviors are emotionally abusive. And so I really like the way Minwala goes about it and teaches individuals about the integrity disorder, because when an individual can see that the way they're causing damage and causing pain, then they can actually do something about it. But we have all sorts of protectants that don't want us to see the pain that we're causing the other person, because that's insanely painful to us. Because I would say the majority of individuals I work with, they don't want to be hurting their partner. They don't want to cause any more pain to them. They know that they've hurt them. They don't want to keep causing them pain. But what I see a lot of times is they almost go like this. They don't want to see how much pain they're still causing them, because that cues their own shame. But we have to take off the blinders so we can see the impact we're having, so we can actually heal deeper issues.
Absolutely. Okay.
I realize we have to wrap up. Luke, do you have any final thoughts for those who have betrayed on just surviving the holidays?
Yeah, it's just an excellent opportunity to create some safety through active listening and not running from your partner, to get grounded and regulated through routine, to be present through a really hard season. And that has an opportunity to pay dividends. Not that's what you're looking for, but that's what the outcome could be.
And if you need help doing it, if you aren't able to do it yet on your own, you're normal, but do get help. Do get someone else who can help you navigate that and help you be able to get past that with your partner.